The nonprofit MBA purpose is to provide new business insights and fresh creative ideas for executive directors and their teams that will help them improve their organization. Here is your host, Stephen Halasnik.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Steve Halasnik. I'll be your host for today, and I am co-founder of Financing Solutions, and Financing Solutions is the largest provider of lines of credit to small nonprofits in the United States. We've been doing it for 13 years. We are A-plus certified by the Better Business Bureau, five-star rated by Google Reviews. The line of credit is extremely valuable to nonprofits. It's a very popular product. And if you're interested in learning more about setting up a line of credit for your nonprofit, please visit our website at nonprofitmbapodcast.com. Again, that's nonprofitmbapodcast.com. And today I'm very excited to be speaking with Lyndon Matte from Pilot Ship Consulting. Lyndon is a Canadian-based CPA and founder of Pilot Ship Consulting. He works with nonprofit leaders and boards to ensure there is strong, reliable, and trustworthy financial oversight in place. His specialty is working with leaders who don't have a background in finance or accounting. He teaches and implements systems to oversee the finances of your nonprofit that you don't need to have, and you don't need to have an accounting degree or CPA to keep up with, and provides ongoing advisory services to boards and executives that want access to higher level of expertise they don't have in-house or need on a full-time basis. Lyndon, welcome to today's Nonprofit MBA podcast.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
And just to be clear, although you're Canadian-based, you're Nova Scotia, actually, you work with organizations throughout the United States?
That's correct. Yeah, I can work with organizations in the States for sure.
Okay, sounds good. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about, from your experience, nonprofits that don't have strong financial oversight. I mean, let's take it back to the basic level. What problems does that cause?
Well, kind of the best example that I can always sort of give that always seems to work when I'm talking with groups is if you go to Google and you go to the news tab and you type in nonprofit fraud or nonprofit theft with your city or your state or your province, you know, if you put in a geography that's got more than a few thousand people in it, you're going to find examples of issues that have come up in the last few months. It's kind of pervasive. And one of the truisms about that is the vast majority of times when there are issues like this, they get dealt with privately. They don't actually make it into the news cycle or get published like that. So there's a number of reasons why this happens, but it all kind of comes down to the fact that all nonprofits are overseen by volunteer boards. And the demand and the need for, you know, the expectation that's put on these boards is always growing. Nonprofits themselves are all growing as sort of our cities and get bigger. There's also sort of more nonprofits than ever. They're sort of covering sort of more causes and more needs that come up all the time. And a trend that's certainly the case here in Canada is there's always sort of a bit of a push of mandates that sort of used to live with our governments that are getting pushed down into nonprofits. So that can be a more sort of efficient and effective, you know, method of delivery for some of these services. But it does take, you know, relatively high dollar values or amounts of funding out of, you know, a pretty stringent environment that takes place in the government and pushes them down into nonprofits that just may not have the level of, you know, financial sophistication to have controls and oversight on it the way that governments do. So it's those sorts of things and a number of other causes that sort of lead to this need.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my organization does, my company, Financing Solutions, deals with a lot of smaller nonprofits. These are like under $5 million in size. And what I often see is it's not the board that is asking for financial information, not putting together what things we should be measuring. You know, and they're not talking about at board meetings, financial measurements other than how much money have we brought in. You know, that's an obvious one, and what our expenses are. It's sometimes the executive director who's going to the board, and as the organization grows and gets more sophisticated, they start to understand they got to start having things that they're going to look at that are more financial related. Is that your experience too?
Yeah, well, what we often see in the hiring, when you look at sort of, you know, in the nonprofit space, we call it the chief staff officer. So that might be your executive director or managing director or CEO, sort of depending on your size. More often than not, they come from, you know, a professional background that makes them, you know, an expert in their field. You know, it might be a certain sort of cause or a certain field of health that they're coming from and then moving into nonprofits. Or they may, you know, have a long career in a certain industry or profession, and then sort of late in their career, they move into the sort of the nonprofit side to be part of maybe that association. But this may be the first time that they're actually overseeing, you know, a whole organization or and it's in all of the different operations, and more specifically as that ties to finance. So you may have a long history or a full career in a health-related field, and then you transfer over to being the executive director, and it could be your first time overseeing, you know, a budget that could be millions of dollars. And then getting sort of a little bit more specific, it's also your first time probably overseeing possibly, you know, a technical finance person. You may have a finance manager or somebody who's a CPA that's reporting to you, but there's sort of like an imbalance of technical expertise there where, you know, they're giving you this information and saying it's correct, but you don't necessarily have the experience or the technical skills to validate or verify that. So yeah. That's sort of the nature of what I do. It exists at the same level at the board, right? You could have a full board of very committed, experienced professionals overseeing, you know, whatever the cause may be. But they all may be, you know, passionate or have expertise in the cause itself or the subject matter. But nobody may have that expertise on, you know, how do we validate these reports that we're getting, or how can we be confident that they're correct? They're actually reflecting, you know, what's going on in the day to day.
Let's talk about that, because, you know, you mentioned early on that fraud is, you know, and I think we're all, you know, especially those who are in the nonprofit sector, you know, they're very trusting, right? Yes. So regardless if you're a board member, I mean, honestly, we see a lot of fraud at nonprofits of things that executive directors are doing that are fraudulent, you know, so... you know, as we're doing our due diligence for, you know, approving a line of credit. So I, you know, regardless if it's the executive director, if you're in this, if you're listening to this podcast because you're a board member, you know, that's one way that you need to look at it. If you're an executive director, you need to look at someone who's taking care of your books. So let's first look at the executive director who has somebody who's taking care of their books. Mm-hmm. What do you need to look at to make sure there isn't fraudulent activity?
Yeah, well, the one sort of caveat I will put in, you know, fraud and theft is kind of the big scary terms or the worst case scenarios. But, you know, having robust or trustworthy oversight is also good. You know, for the positives, you can make sure you're being effective with the, you know, the limited resources that nonprofits sure. have. So it's not always...
In other words, also that it's being done yeah, correctly.
The negative motivator is always the strongest one, or when you see these articles in the news or these issues come up, you know, that's the motivating factor. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you can sort of rule out these risky areas, there's also ground to be made up in terms of being, you know, more efficient and providing better ROI with the resources we have. But, you know, fraud and theft can be a good incentive to get started to look at this stuff. But back to your question. So, you know, when we talk about, you know, oversight of finances, there's a number of different levels, right? It goes right. You can start at sort of the bookkeeping level. So when you talk about, you know, an executive director that comes in and now they're overseeing, you know, a finance function, and that can take many shapes and forms depending on, you know, the size of the organization, or maybe they outsource to a firm or something like that for their bookkeeping. There should be, you know, some level of understanding of the basics, right? Like you can't just put blind trust into your finance function, even if that's just one part-time bookkeeper and your whole budget is, you know, let's say $100,000. You still need to be able to be sure that things are being categorized correctly and things are being, you know, tagged and accounted for accurately. So right down at the sort of the bookkeeping, making general entries into QuickBooks or whatever program you're using, there has to be some mechanism or some time allocated to confirming that. And then you can sort of go up the ladder in terms of complexity. If you're sure that the basics are being done, you know, the entries are accurate, you're catching all of your transactions are being reflected, you can move into sort of, do you have a month-end close process to make sure all of your accounts are reconciled? You know, that would still fall under sort of the basic stuff. And then if that's all in order, there's always sort of another level to go to. You can start to look at, you know, things like revenue recognition is sort of the one of the first sort of complex topics that comes up if you're If your organization gets, you know, government funding or grant funding, you have to know how to appropriately recognize your revenue or when you're able to. And that's something that would be sort of totally new to somebody that doesn't have a history of managing a budget or something like this. And then you can continue to sort of go up the ladder of you know, deferred revenue and revenue recognition, or managing and tracking sort of capital assets. You know, you're doing accruals at the end of periods, depending on, you know, who and how often you're reporting. So it can get sort of progressively more complex, and there's more detail required, you know, based on where your funds come from or how big and complex your organization is. And these are all sorts of things that you have to make sure, even if you're outsourcing to a reputable accounting firm, you can't just sort of wash your hands of it and expect everything is being okay. There has to be some participation in the review and oversight of that, you know, with whoever is the most senior person on staff. And then ultimately the board has to be able to trust that what they're, you know, what's being presented to them and then what they're presenting out to the broader sort of community accurately reflects, you know, what's going on.
Yeah. So I guess if you're a smaller nonprofit, one of the things I guess the executive director should do is at the end of every month, look at your bank statements, look at, Look, if you're using QuickBooks, I would also recommend that they don't use QuickBooks, that they use a nonprofit accounting software that's made for nonprofits, honestly. They should probably at the end of every month or the beginning of the following month, look at everything, all the transactions that were recorded in the accounting package, and make sure, like you said, that it was categorized correctly and that it's everything that you know. If you don't know it, if you don't recognize it, then you need to do some research and say, what was this? I mean, I think that's best practices. I mean, I'll share with everybody something that happened with us. Now, I don't think this is really something you can control, but not that you can't control, but you wouldn't have known about it. You know, I had this one company a while back that we were using a payroll services company, and they would tell us, it was a relatively newer one to us, so we were only with them for 18 months, and we would make our payroll taxes to them, and then they would pay the government, you know, and we found out that they never made those payments. Regardless if he was on drugs, honestly, that's what the issue was. He was going to, using the money for cocaine. And I'm not exaggerating, because my CFO had to go to court to, prosecute him. We weren't prosecuting him. The state was, and, he wasn't, we were responsible still to make it sure, even though we paid the money, he didn't make it. So we had to repay it. Now, luckily it worked out. It wasn't as much as we thought it was going to be, but, I mean, these are things that kind of catch you by surprise. This is an example of it does happen. And I do know a number of friends who've had bookkeepers that have stolen from them. So it is something that you'll have to be careful with. Now let's talk about a board. What does the board need to look over to make sure that there's fraudulent activity going on in the organization?
Yeah, well, I think the example that you gave about the payroll remittances is this is one of those sort of things that you can't really outsource or hire your way towards sort of being free of risk, right? Sometimes if you outsource to a reputable or what you think is a reputable payroll firm, you sort of expect that the appropriate remittances are going where they're supposed to. Or maybe if you outsource to a reputable accounting firm to do your bookkeeping, you put a level of trust that, you know, they've got this brand name organization that's nationwide. You expect it all to be accurate. The truth is you just can't absolve yourself of responsibility, right? If you're going to take the time and put your name forward to be on a board, you are responsible to be doing some diligence here and providing this level of oversight. That's where sort of the buck stops, so to speak. So, I recently re-listened to an episode of yours that you did with Stephen King from Growth Force, and he laid out sort of the seven reports that a board or an executive director should be asking for. And I kind of thought that's a really good sort of starting point. If you can get your organization there, at least those sort of seven reports or some sort of subset of them are going to lay out, you know, what you should be looking at. And then within there, you can sort of see your sort of realm of responsibility. Anything that's in there, you should be, you know, your board should have either a finance and audit committee, or maybe the treasurer, or the whole board should be participating in some level of making sure there's nothing in there that's a total blind spot. So, you know, if you're an organization that's big enough that you're running payroll and you have a staff of, you know, X number of people, and, you know, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars. So whether you choose to administer that internally or outsource it, you need to know sort of at a high level, what should we be verifying to make sure this is being done correctly? And, you know, the example you gave is a tough one, because if you go to a reputable company, you know, like the ADPs of the world or something like that, you just assume that's happening. Yeah. Right? They're collecting money for to be remitted to the government, and you just assume it's happening. But, you know, maybe that you have to be careful, you know, don't assume, or make sure at least every once in a while you're checking on that sort of thing.
Well, what we did, just for our audience to know what we did after we moved to a new company. Now, this is a long time ago. So, you know, a lot of people aren't using payroll companies anymore. They're just doing it electronically. But if you are using a payroll company, what I would suggest, what we did was we required that payroll company to show us the receipt from the state that the bill had been paid every week, or every 2 weeks. So let's go back to I was going to ask you that question next anyway about
that's a perfect example, right? And that sort of leans on what I try to do. You know, nonprofits are obviously resource limited, so you can't just have, you know, a consultant, or you can't always attract, you know, high level, you know, sort of financial professionals to be on your board. But the example you just gave is perfect, where, you know, the right bit of information or the right bit of know-how, that sort of check can be led by a non-technical person.
Yeah.
Right? So if you joined a new board and say, listen, we should really be getting from our payroll provider this confirmation or this receipt, and you build a little process around that, well, then anybody can maintain that process. So whether it's that executive director that's new to managing a budget, if they know that step, I need to get this receipt and that gives me the confirmation I need. That's the sort of progress that I like to work towards with nonprofits, you know, sort of manageable, attainable levels of control and procedures that can protect you against, you know, the biggest risks. And once you get them in place, you move on to the next one.
Yeah. Let me get to ask this question, because it's on my mind, and then we're going to get back on topic a little bit. But in a for-profit in the United States, I don't know what the minimum basis is on a cash basis versus an accrual basis of accounting that's required, but it used to be 5 million, right? So if your organization had $5 million versus of sales or revenue, then you had to start looking at going to an accrual basis. Do nonprofits have to worry about cash basis versus an accrual basis?
So a cash basis is still available. At least I can speak, you know, to what the case is here in Canada. The threshold is much lower than that. I believe there are some stipulations around, you know, how and where your organization is sort of registered or incorporated at. But it would be much lower than 5 million. And it also typically ties into sometimes like source of funding. If you have, you know, funding from the government, for instance, you probably have to declare to be using accrual based. But yeah, cash basis is still used, but only with sort of the smallest of organizations here in Canada, at least.
In the United States, you might, our listeners, you might want to go back to your accountants and ask them, because if you're on the threshold of going from 5 million to, I don't know what it is for nonprofits, for for-profits, it used to be 5 million. And I think it is based on industry a little bit, but, it can make a significant difference, but I don't know why it would make a difference, because you don't pay taxes in a nonprofit, but it is an important question that I think you should go back to an accountant and ask them. I want to go back to what you said about Steve King, who did a similar podcast for me. And I was going to ask you this anyway. Tell me the major reports that you think a board and even an executive director should be viewing on a monthly basis.
Not for fraud,
but just to understand how the organization's doing. I mean, I certainly know revenue, or, you know, that's, you know, the total amount of donations that have come on in a month by month basis, right? Your expenses, right? That those are the two most obvious, right? I'm sure you're probably going to say cash on hand, right? expected money coming in and when, right? What things am I missing here?
Well, I think that's one of those questions, you know, like all good accounting questions, the answer is it depends. Mm-hmm. It really depends on sort of the type and the model that your organization is following. So I've worked for a bunch of different nonprofits sort of in-house on a full-time basis. And in some cases, in a number of them, you know, cash flow was the number one priority for the finance person to be monitoring, right? We were, in some cases, you know, looking forward to next payroll, making sure we had the cash on hand to meet the next payroll. So that's not, you know, uncommon for certain, you know, especially sort of donation driven organizations that really depend on, you know, a real time sort of inflow, a constant growth of donation revenue. But then there's other organizations, especially in sort of the healthcare space, that sort of get funding up front for large projects that run for years. So monitoring cash flow isn't, you know, it's still important, but it's not, you know, mission critical for the day to day. So obviously, you know, you're looking at your standard sort of set of reports, your statement of financial position or your statement of activities. And that's sort of what you're, you know, comparing to. And nonprofits are all sort of budget driven, right? They approve a budget either annually or sometimes there's a multi-year work plan that you're always sort of comparing against and building from. So the most sort of important thing is sort of to be comparing against that, right? So the budget, most boards have a reasonably robust process to go through where they approve the overall budget for a period of time. And their sort of first priority in terms of oversight is to make sure
to review
the staff is tracking towards that.
Yeah.
So, you know, what exactly that means in terms of how much variance there may be or what sort of supporting what we would call sort of management accounting or management reporting needs to be done to support that. You know, maybe it's very, very cash flow based in some cases where that's a priority, or other times it may be, you know, project based. If you were a very project based organization, you might want to be looking at individual projects to make sure, you know, you're bidding or proposing on them properly. And then it could be any mix of other sort of supporting documents from there. Sometimes you need, if you're fundraising, you need to look at sort of your ROI on fundraising efforts and all those sorts of things. So you know, the core standard financial statements and comparing against your working budget is sort of the starting point. And then what you need to support that really is organization dependent.
Yeah. And I'm going to give that this is the biggest hint, not hint, recommendation I would tell to our listeners. So, you know, one of the things that we've always done in our organization is we keep, it's called key performance indicators, KPIs. It's an industry term. And so using an Excel document, you know, we track several categories of things. And when you become a more professional organization, that's what you do. So if you're a small nonprofit right now and you're looking to be bigger, tracking numbers is what bigger organizations, nonprofits do. Okay. That's how you become more professional and better run. And, but this is the key. One of the things that we implemented years and years and years ago was on that Excel document, having on that Excel document all of the past years, because it really allows you to have the pulse of the organization when you can say, hey, you know, we had, you know, $300,000 that typically came in the first 3 months, and now we have zero. What, you know, what happened? You know, so, you know, you can, you know, it allows you to really have a history. And through that history, you really have a pulse of your organization. And I can't tell you how many times we went back and said, oh, so what happened the last quarter of, and what happened the quarter of a year ago, you know? And it's really easy to do once you get involved in determining what KPIs you want. And you just go to your bookkeeper, or you log into your accounting software before your board meeting, and you plug it right in, and it's right there, and it's really simple, and becomes part of your financial update to your board. So, makes sense, Lyndon?
Yeah, well, certainly sort of any organization that's of any scale at all really has to have sort of a performance management system in place, mm-hmm. whether it's KPIs or OKRs or means and ends. There's any number of systems that you can use. And absolutely your financial performance has to be sort of, you know, it's both going to have its own section, right? Its own pillar or its own section of the scorecard or whatever it may be. But it's also, you know, the financial system supports the tracking of all your other metrics, right? So you, to determine, you know, how is your programming team doing, or how is your fundraising team doing, you need to support that with the financial data. So the finance is going to be sprinkled through performance management across the whole organization. And definitely, you know, looking year to year, you can look at trends, and sometimes, you know, organizations can really change in scale and scope over a bunch of years. But the benefit of having that financial information sort of well categorized and well organized, you can look back, and even if you're not looking at sort of the same size budget from 5 or 6 years ago, you can look at individual initiatives and programs and see, you know, what was the ROI, how efficient were we at fundraising, or how efficient were we at program delivery back a few years ago, even though we were at a smaller scale. You know, have we gotten more or less efficient at that now that we're a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller or whatever the case may be? So there's just sort of no end to the benefit of having, you know, your financial documentation and processes clear and concise and consistent across a bunch of years. So it allows you, like I said, you know, the first step is making sure you're protected against fraud and theft. And then once you're reasonably confident in that and you have those systems in place, the same work that you did to lay that groundwork can absolutely be used for, you know, performance management or getting better and getting, you know, improving your operations. So that's sort of the spin-off benefit or how it's all connected.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things I would add to why it's so important to have KPIs and to measure them on a monthly basis. One of them is, you know, you usually have assumptions about how your organization is doing, but you want to base those assumptions based on data. You know, so, you know, like if I said to somebody at a nonprofit, okay, so what is the average amount of time that a grant is promised to you and when it actually shows up, right? And you say, oh, it's about, you know, 30 days, right? And if you're tracking that, all right, and you go back and you look at it and it's more like 60 days because you looked at the data, it really helps you budget, you know, and to understand things. So it really gives you... Data gives you the ability to test your assumptions and make sure they are accurate. The second thing is, I would say is, you know, an executive director and a founder isn't going to be there forever. Succession planning is very important. You know, you've built this organization and, you know, you care a ton about it, and I'm sure you want it to transcend you. And to be able to have a new executive director that comes on and have that all that data right there on a spreadsheet, it's really helpful. And the last thing I would say is, don't think, oh, well, I have it in QuickBooks or I have it in my accounting package. I can easily get that data. The fact of the matter is yes, it might be true, but it's so much easier. You become more aware of the numbers if you're tracking the same categories on a consistent basis. So those are the things that I've seen insight into why it's so important to have financial numbers that you're tracking, KPIs, whatever you want to call it. Anything you would add to that, Lyndon?
Yeah, I would just say there's, you know, like a lot of things, especially around finance, that there's just a tremendous amount of compounding that takes place, or compounding of benefits. So if you're like, your point on succession was exactly right. So you may have, you know, a treasurer or an executive director who's overseeing the finances, who's very comfortable with seeing it sort of as it currently is, or providing oversight based on, you know, they may even want access to the QuickBooks program file or into the bank statement. And if they're, you know, an accountant in their day job, they might be very comfortable providing oversight in that way, in a very hands-on way. But if that person, like to your point on succession, finishes up their term and the next person comes in and doesn't have that expertise or doesn't have any familiarity with accounting systems or financial statements or anything, it's you lose all that headway that you made up. So when you fall back to sort of more sort of attainable processes or more accessible processes, or if you take the time that you have that financially sort of experienced person, you know, on hand that you can make use of, they should be looking at, you know, from my perspective, sort of oversight procedures, or even like you said, just data operationally, find a way to file or compile it in a way that's more accessible to folks that may not be as technically proficient. So, you know, when we talk about oversight, like he might be very comfortable or she might be very comfortable getting their hands on, but it's not very much help when they're gone. But if they can lay out some processes, kind of like we talked about the payroll thing, like he or she may just be able to tell inherently that they can sign into their, you know, government account and see that the remittance was made. But that might not be an accessible sort of workflow for somebody else. Mm. But, you know, getting that receipt and making sure that that receipt from the you know, government entity is scanned into a shared drive or maybe like a board management portal, that every single month there's a file that says, you know, payroll remittance confirmations. Anybody can be taught that regardless of their background to go in, you know, 5 days after payroll, there should be a copy of a receipt in this shared drive location. And if that's sort of the one of the 10 things you do in your role as the treasurer is to verify sort of 10 things like that, that were sort of well-designed processes when we had, you know, a financial sort of expert on hand, that's a sort of a maintainable, accessible sort of internal control, we could call it. That can go on forever. And then it just compounds, right? If every treasurer that comes in for a 2-year term can create two of those, they sort of stack on top of each other. And it makes, and when those processes are made to be sort of robust and accessible, it makes the succession really easy. Because you can draw up, you know, if you and I were to get together and do just a Google Doc for a treasurer handover, we could write the process for, you know, verify the receipt from payroll remittance in 90 seconds. You know, here's the shared drive link. Here's what you're looking for. Here's some sort of red flags. Do that, you know, on the 20th and 10th of every month, and you're in good shape. So you could really stack, you know, 10 or 15 of those or a new one every year, or every board term. And they just sort of compound, you know, every treasurer you have or every executive director you have over the years comes into sort of an easier onboarding process for this side of stuff. So it's really effective on like the financial oversight front, but it would lend itself just as well to your fundraising staff or your programming staff or whatever else you may have.
And just keep in mind, the bigger your organization gets, and I think there's a chicken and an egg here, and that is the bigger your organization gets, the more processes you need. And the reverse is true. If you want your organization to get bigger, you have to have processes. So if you are stuck at $1 million or $500,000 a year in revenue as a nonprofit, you say, well, I don't need to do these because we're small, right? What I would counsel you to say is, well, it could be that you're small because you haven't built processes. Now, today we're talking about financial processes, but there's all different types of processes involved in an organization. And this is what I see. The larger nonprofits have definitive and defined processes, and that's what allows them to grow. So here we're talking about financial processes. Knowing your numbers is critical to running a nonprofit. And so, Lyndon, you know, we have a couple of minutes, like a minute left. So what haven't I covered today that you kind of think that executive directors or board members should really know?
Well, I think the sort of the main takeaway or the main sort of piece of advice that I would give is that almost every nonprofit would be well advised to spend a bit more time thinking about their financial oversight. And so, you know, that doesn't mean you have to go out and hire, you know, consultants or accounting firms to do huge reviews all at one time. But there's levels to it. There's certainly very accessible and attainable things that can sort of be, you know, self-taught or self-learned for your organization. Or you can hire, you know, an organization or a consultant or someone like myself to come in and give advice. But you don't have to do it all at once. It's a process and it's always going to evolve. But sometimes even just getting that sort of that culture established, the fact that your staff or your executive knows that, okay, our board is looking at this, we're looking to sort of adopt better oversight and some internal controls and documenting processes, it just sort of sends the right signal to staff that this is sort of the approach that's being taken. And like we talked about, you can add, you know, one process a quarter, and it's not a huge burden, and it doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, hugely resource intensive. But it compounds, right? Whether it's in finance or whether it's in sort of operations, these little improvements and the more you can streamline stuff, you win that time back, and then you can make the next improvement. And when you make enough improvements, maybe you've won back enough time that, you know, both your finance staff and your executive and your board can focus on that next big grant or that next big funding proposal or fundraiser. And like you said, it gets you over that next threshold. It gets you over the million a year annually, or the 5 million, or the 100,000, whatever the case may be.
Yep. Cool. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank so very much Linda Matty from Pilot Ship Consulting for coming on today's podcast. And if you like today's podcast, please feel free to share it with a friend and also subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. If you like today's podcast, please give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get the word out. And, you know, we're already in the top 1% of the most listened to podcasts for nonprofits. And, you know, those reviews really help other people hear about us. I love our guests. I think, you know, like Lyndon is fantastic. And, you know, all our guests, if you just listen to this podcast, you're going to get so many great ideas for how to run a great nonprofit. And Lyndon really gave some good stuff today. If you're interested in getting a line of credit or learning more about it, please visit our website at nonprofitmbapodcast.com. And Lyndon, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
The easiest place is they can just track me down on my website. It's pilotship.ca. And then all of my contact info and other ways to reach me is easy enough to find there.
Great. Thanks for coming on today.
Okay. Thanks a lot for having me.
So I want to thank all our listeners, not so much for listening, thank you for that, but also for, you know, trying to make the world a better place. It's really a full-time effort. You know, there are so many issues going on, and you guys are out there every single day. I thank you for that. And Lyndon thanks you for that as well. And I just want to remind you that you're no good to your cause, your family, your friends, and even yourself, if you don't prioritize yourself first every single day. I know that you're all very passionate about your causes, and that's great. But, you know, solving world problems is a marathon and not a sprint, and you'll burn out if you don't take care of yourself. And we all know what that means. That means maybe getting up and, you know, thinking about when you're going to exercise that day, or when, you know, if you're going to meditate or pray, or if you're going to, you know, take some time for yourself to journal or whatever it is, you know, make sure you take some time for yourself and your family and those type of things and your friends, because that'll help you with your work that you do on a constant basis. Other than that, I want to thank you for listening to the Nonprofit MBA podcast, and have a fantastic day.